We're going to learn a Lag BaOmer Sicha that was edited and checked by the Rebbe Muga Sicha. And this Lag BaOmer Sicha is published in volume 22. This is from a Farbrengen from Parsha Emor, which that year was Erev Lag BaOmer in 1980. And this Lag BaOmer Sicha was published in the edited version in 1982. The Rebbe begins regarding the simcha, the joy that needs to be on the day of Lag BaOmer. There are brought down several or many reasons of why we have simcha on the date of Lag BaOmer. So before we get into the sicha, the simple translation of Lag BaOmer, we count in the 49 days of the Omer. From the second night of Pesach, we begin to count. And every night we continue to count for 49 days. And the 50th day is the holiday of Shavuos. Lag is Lamed Gimel, which is 33. So the 33rd day of the Omer is called, in short, Lag BaOmer. Lag means 33. So the 33rd day of the Omer is a special day of the Omer. Why is it so special? Why do we have to be so joyful on that day? So the Rebbe brings down two well-known reasons. One is based on a story in the Talmud and Tractate Yevamos. Over there it says that the Gemara is going through there the subject that if a person was married to one woman and had a number of children with your first wife, and then one day you need to remarry for whatever reason, and you know, whatever came in your life, your wife passed away, a divorce, you're remarrying. So do you need to have children again with the second wife? You already had children with the first wife. So the Talmud goes through and analyzes this question. And it says, just because you had children when you were younger with your first wife, you should have children again with your second wife. And part of the proof to the argument is, they tell a story. They say, Rabbi Akiva, who was the great, great teacher, and he had 12,000 peers of students, meaning each student had a chavrusa to learn with, meaning he had 24,000 students. And they all died in a plague. There was a terrible plague and all his students died, except for 5 students. This plague, according to the Gaonim, happened from the beginning of the Omer, and the plague stopped on Lag BaOmer. We're going to learn later in today's Sicha of why they died. It says because they died because Leinagu Kavod Zebazet. They did not have respect for the other, for one to the other, and there was a terrible plague. And what happened? Imagine 24,000 students, all your students die except for 5. So basically, it was the end. There was nothing in the world. The world was empty, void from Torah. And from these 5 students, they rebuilt Torah into the world. So this was the proof that you see that even though you accomplished a life first, now if you're restarting again, you have to restart again, even. He started again from 5 students. But what we deduce from here is the part that they stopped to die at this Lag BaOmer. Since the plague of these 24,000 students stopped Lag BaOmer, therefore it's a day of simcha, a day of joy. That's reason number one. Number two, it is the Hilula of the Rashbi. Hilula usually actually means a day of passing. For a tzaddik, we say hilula, which is like a day of a wedding. It's a day when they're in unison with Hashem. It's called a hilula. The hilula, the day of passing of this day, was for the great sage, the great Tana, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was his name. Meaning it was the yahrzeit of the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And he said, the day he died, before he died, he said that the day of my passing should be a joyful day. So that's another reason why Lag B'Omer has to be Besimcha. So we have the reason because the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped to die in Lag B'Omer. And we have the second reason because that's the day when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai died and he said that it should be a joyful day. Those are the two reasons. Now, everything in the Torah we know is very, very precise. So we have to say that there must be a connection between these two events. Besides the obvious connection that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is one of the students of Rabbi Akiva. As a matter of fact, he was one of the five students that survived the plague. And many years later, he passes away on Lag B'Omer. But besides the fact that he's a student, we have to understand what is the connection between the fact that the students of Rabbi Akiva all died, almost all of them died, and that the plague stopped on Lag B'Omer, to the fact that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai passes away on Lag B'Omer. In other words, the whole idea of the plague stopping Lag B'Omer that calls for joy is because a sad thing finished. It's no more sad. The plague stopped. But then the second reason is that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai passed away, which seems like a sad day. So what's the connection of these two reasons of why we celebrate and why we have to be besimcha on Lag B'Omer? And the contrary, it totally seems like the opposite thing. These Rashbi was the one of the five students that survived. And it says, from those five students, Heim Ha'emidu Torah, they rebuilt the establishment of Torah. That means that the Simcha comes from the students of Rabbi Akiva that they stopped to die. And that becomes the day of the Rashbi. And the other students of Rabbi Akiva still stayed alive. The opposite of the idea of Rabbi Shimon passes away. So what's going on over here? How do you make the connection between these two things? It's true that he passed away, but the other four seem to have still been alive. So to explain this, we could say that what happens on the date anniversary of a tzaddik, a righteous person, on their date of their anniversary, their passing? What happens on that day? The Alter Rebbe writes in the Tanya, there's a very famous two epistles that the Alter Rebbe writes, letters that he wrote to the students of Reb Mendel Haradoker, a big tzaddik who passed away in Israel, and he wrote a letter of condolence to them. And there's another letter in the Tanya also in the back in the left fourth section of the Tanya where he writes to Reb Levi Yitzchak Partichever for when his son passed away. So two letters of condolence, but over there the Alter Rebbe writes in the first one that all the deeds and the Torah and the work that a tzaddik did throughout his lifetime all shines again on the day of their yahrzeit. Now, the deeds of a tzaddik we're obviously talking about are true, real life deeds. They're living, true living things. So it's understood that on the day of the passing, you reach to your full completion of the purpose of what your whole mission was on this world. And since what was the whole point of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? It was the opposite of the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva that passed away. And as a matter of fact, the goal and purpose of what Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was all about was something about life that was the opposite and the cause that the plague should stop to die. Should stop going on. So when is the full level of the glory of the work of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, when does that happen? On the day when the plague stopped of Lag B'Omer. So we could say maybe that that's the thing, since Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's full mission of this world is being revealed and completed on the day of his passing, it means that it's also the day that revealed so much of life that the plague stopped. But then we have to understand, since there was five students of Rabbi Akiva who survived, and the fact that the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, specifically by him, he passes away on Lag B'Omer, so that means the fact that the plague stopped must have a connection to him more than the other four students. There must be something unique to him over the four students. And the question is, what is unique about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who we call in short the Rashbi, regarding this thing that differentiates him from the other four students that survived the plague? To understand this, says the Rebbe, we have to understand and analyze first what happened that these students all died. What? It's a crazy thing, a plague, 24,000 students. So as we mentioned, the Gemara, the Talmud says that the 24,000 students Rabbi Akiva died because loy nahagu kavod ze lazeh. They did not give honor one to the other. Seemingly, it's completely wondrous, such a statement. The reason why it's such a wonder to say such a thing is because we're talking about the students of Rabbi Akiva. What was Rabbi Akiva well known for? One of the most famous things Rabbi Akiva is known for is for his statement that he taught the world on the mitzvah of v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Love your fellow like as you love yourself. That's a huge thing. Rabbi Akiva added and said that this mitzvah, to love your fellow like you love yourself, is actually the cardinal mitzvah of the entire Torah. Ze klal gadol b'Torah. This is the most important thing of the whole Torah, is this mitzvah, to love your fellow as yourself. How could it be that Rabbi Akiva's own students should fail in this exact area where he says this point, that this is the fundamental thing? He was the teacher. They were the students. Now, when you say about somebody that they are your students, that means they carry the values of what you taught. Otherwise, you can't call them your students. Right? We all know student doesn't mean just somebody that sat in class and got a mark. Students means that you teach the values of your what you were taught from your teacher. So if they are called the Talmidei Rabbi Akiva, his students, how could it be that by them, that they didn't have respect one for the other? Unbelievable question. So the Rebbe teaches us here an unbelievable, novel idea in how to understand what does it mean that they didn't have respect for each other, and how does it fit with the fact that their teacher is the one that teaches this is a fundamental thing of the whole Torah, to love your fellow. It says like this. Every one of the students of Rabbi Akiva understood their teacher in another way. He brings in the footnote that the Talmud says, Ein Dei Sam Shavus. Students, people in general, don't think alike. There's no such a thing of two people that think exactly the same. No such a thing. We even find, he quotes, he brings down from Pirkei Avos, it says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students. And then he asked, he said, "Go, let's see which student is the best that you should attach yourself to." The fact that you could say that, even though they're all his students, means that there's a difference between each one. Each one understands their teacher slightly different. There are those that serve Hashem more out of love for Hashem. There are those that serve Hashem more out of fear for Hashem, and so on. Every student takes from their teacher and grows with it in a certain way that's different than the other. Therefore, what happened here was every one of his students digested, internalized the teachings of their teacher to the point that by every one of them, it was so, with such confident that the way they understood their teacher is the right way. And if anybody doesn't understand my teacher the way I understand him, that means you are not complete. And since they were the students of Rabbi Akiva, who always gekocht, he was boiled into this theme of love your fellow as you love yourself. Therefore, every single one of them couldn't stand when a friend of theirs didn't understand it the way they understand it. In other words, they cared so much for their colleague that they wanted their colleague also to understand it like them and grow and grow and grow. And therefore, they were adamant to impress their understandings on their friends. That your friend should also serve Hashem the way you'd serving Hashem. And when another colleague of yours did not accept your view, therefore I can't respect that other one. So each one didn't respect the other out of the way they learned it from their teacher, because they learned this from their teacher so well, that you must love your friend. So if I care for you so much and you're not going to serve God the way I understand it, how could I respect you? It's because I love you. If I didn't care for you, then do it the way you want. I don't care. Who cares? But because I care for you, that's why I want you to see it the way I see it. And that's why they didn't respect one to the other. Because these were true people. You know how you say true people? They weren't, God forbid, achas bapeh v'achas balev. They weren't somebody that says one thing with their mouth, but in their heart, it's not the same with for what they say, what they speak. They were true. True people means that what you say is what you believe, what you feel. You don't baloney stories. And therefore, they couldn't have a proper respect for their friend. If you truly feel that your way is the way, how could I respect the next person if they don't see it the same way? Now, that's how you could explain what does it mean that the students who have the name, the Rabbi Akiva students, who should have taken and learned so well this principal rule of love your fellow as yourself that their teacher taught, and nevertheless they were able to not have respect for the other. Because it was out of love that they didn't respect their friend's opinion. Now, since they were the students of Rabbi Akiva, it's understood that they must have learned this kind of passion in life to be so extremist about your view. They must have learned this attitude of extreme from their teacher. Otherwise, where would they get this kind of attitude to go in such a far limb? To be so strong about yourself in your way to the point that you don't even leave room for your friend's view? We could see this, that they got this attitude from Rabbi Akiva. Where do we see this? The Talmud tells us a whole story about Rabbi Akiva. He was one of the 10 martyrs that are mentioned on Yom Kippur in the Machzor. If you stay Yom Kippur in Shul long enough to the break, you get to read in the Machzor, right, about the 10 martyrs. So we have the story of the Rabbi Akiva. They're the famous story. He lived in the time of the Romans. I'll just fill you in with the story. He lived in the time of the Romans when it was forbidden to study Torah. Rabbi Akiva went and gathered together students to learn Torah. His colleague came to him and said, how can you be teaching Torah? It's the risk of life here. And he said to him the example of fish that were swimming in the water being attacked by a big fish. And the wolf came to the fish and said, fish, fish, what are you doing? Why are you running like this? And they said, what do you want from us? We're being attacked by a big fish. We're running for our life. And the wolf said, come out of the water and I'll protect you. And the fish said, fool, fool. You want us to come out of the water? In the water, we have a chance to survive. Out of the water, we're certain to death. Rabbi Akiva said to them, if I don't learn Torah, it's guaranteed death. It's not worth it to live. What's life without Torah? That's death. If I learn, and maybe the Romans will catch me, that's at least a maybe. That was his analogy. The story goes, the Talmud says, that if he was caught by the Romans eventually, and eventually the Romans took him, he was, by the way, 120 years old when the story happened, and it's an awful story. They scraped the skin off his back, layer by layer, in terrible pain to give him the maximum of pain before he died. And his students said to him, is this really all worth it? And Rabbi Akiva responded, he said, and this is the piece in the Sicha here, Kol yamai hayisi mitztayr. All my life, all the days of my life, I was in pain, waiting. When will come the day that I will merit to die for the sake of Hashem? Now the opportunity came to me, should I not take it? Right? That's the very emotional piece of the story. Now, these students grew up with a teacher that lived this kind of attitude of self-sacrifice. Mesiras nefesh is the Hebrew word. Mesiras nefesh, to be willing to give up yourself, give up your life, is something, this attitude is something that takes a person through and through. Because when a person stays in the moments of self-sacrifice, that means nothing else is relevant. Nothing will stop you. I'm ready to give my life for God. And this was also the attitude of his students, 24,000 students that he had. They all accepted this attitude from Rabbi Akiva, this yearning desire to be able to become one with Hashem, and you give up your life. Therefore, this was a way of serving Hashem to this level of self-sacrifice. And it took them through and through their whole existence that they were given over so much, and therefore they had no room or space for another person, because when you're so consumed in your self-sacrifice, that's your attitude, then there's no room for nobody, even for anybody that doesn't see it the same way. Therefore, they weren't able to give respect one to the other. Now, don't fall asleep. Don't close up now, because the end is key points to this idea of self-sacrifice. I could save your life if you wait till the end, you know? So this is the point so far. Nevertheless, don't look just on this point of the greatness of this kind of way of serving Hashem. You should know that to serve Hashem with self-sacrifice is huge. It's the top. Nevertheless, it's not the ultimate desire from heaven that we should actually die. That's not the ultimate level. The way to serve Hashem, you have to think of this as the concept, as Chassidus brings it down, and the Rebbe is going to bring it down now, that in life, you have to think of it like a rush. Let's say you're jumping out of your seat. You know, you're flying up. You're so excited about something, but you also have to land. You also have to be grounded. Ratzoi means I have such a yearning. I'm going crazy to become one with Hashem. I can't get enough. But you know what? You also have to be grounded. The job of a Jew is to have both. You have to want to become one with Hashem, but then you also have to stay grounded. Right? You know the experience? You go to shul, and you're loving it. You're davening. You're learning. You're the kiddush. You don't want to leave. Who wants to go home from that? Ah, if you stay there the whole time, then you haven't taken the holiness of that space back into your own space. The key is to have the desire, but also to bring it down. That's the ultimate goal. Mesiras nefesh alone, the yearning alone, is not enough. That's the way you leave this world. Therefore, even though it's a huge, huge, high level to reach, to have this yearning and come one with Hashem, it's not the ultimate purpose of why you were put into this world. The main intention of above is that you should have the desire for self-sacrifice, but you have to, after that, come down and have shuv. You have to be grounded. Bring that level of excitement down into this world. How does this happen? How do you do this? The only way to do this is if the way you serve Hashem is in an orderly fashion. You're not a wild person. You have to do things with intellect. You have to serve Hashem with grasping it in an orderly fashion. This is the deeper reason why there was a problem here, and why all the 24,000 students ended up dying. The Gemara says, the Talmud says, that they all died, except for the five, because they didn't honor one to the other. And you know what happened when they all died? The world was shumam. It was empty. There was nothing here. The world was void of Torah. Because their service in this way of self-sacrifice, of desire to Hashem, in this world, they left the world empty. They left, but they left a void. What's the whole purpose of this world? is that there should be a dwelling place. You know how it's explained many places in Chassidus? The difference of a desert and a place where people live. A desert is a place where people don't live. Here, we're talking about a place. The world has to be a place, a dwelling place for where people live. Meaning you have to bring down godliness into this world. And this was the novelty of the five students, as the Talmud puts it, Heim He'emidu Torah. They established the Torah. They put it on ground. They were able to be firm with it because they managed to reach the understanding that the goal is to bring it down. Have the yearning, but you got to have your feet on the ground. Now, certainly, even those five students are called the students of Rabbi Akiva. They also had self-sacrifice. Of course they did. But they had the ultimate level that they also learned from their teacher, and they mastered the comprehension of their teacher, not just of that passion that he said, oh, my whole life I want to die. There was something else very unique about Rabbi Akiva that only five of their students really grasped this. There's another place in the Talmud in Chagiga where it says the story that there were several sages that went into this orchard, some kind of spiritual orchard called the Pardes. The Pardes in general is called the orchard, but Pardes is also an acronym for the four levels or layers of understanding the Torah. Pshat, the simple understanding. Remez, the through things that are alluded to. Drush is the homiletical insight. Said is the secrets. So there were four sages, the Talmud tells us, that they went into this orchard. And it says one of them became crazy. Couldn't handle it. There was so much revelation there that he went mishug. Then another one died there. But regarding Rabbi Akiva, it says that he went into this orchard in peace and he came out in peace. The question is, they all went in peace. What's the emphasis that Rabbi Akiva went in peace and came out in peace? The answer is the attitude in the beginning. When you go in to begin with, yes, you're going in to have this amazing ecstasy of light, revelation, this glory of godliness that you could get only by being into this space of this orchard. But you know what? Because to begin with, when he went in, he had the attitude that my goal of going in is to come out and be settled. Therefore, he was able to go in and come out. Because to begin with, that was his whole attitude. These five students grasped that idea of their teacher. They understood, yes, he's like, so to speak, fanatic in Mesiras Nefesh. The whole life he waited, when is he going to die for this? But ultimately, they understood more deeper that his goal was to go into the orchard, but also to come out and bring down and be grounded. They wanted to be close to, in order to be attached to yourself and close to Hashem with this desire without any limitation, brought him to have an additional level of closeness to Hashem and bring down godliness here into this world. So that's why the five students were so unique over the 24,000 students that actually died. Says the Rebbe, we could explain this also in a remez. There's a certain beautiful hinting here thing. Why is Lag BaOmer in the day of the 18th of Iyar? It's Chai Iyar. The month that we're in now is called Iyar. And the Chai Iyar, the 18th day of Iyar, is when Lag BaOmer, the 33rd day of the Omer, falls out on the 18th day of Iyar. What's the connection? So this is a very famous insight from the Rabbeim, our, you know, Nesiim, Rabbeinu Nesiyenu. They said regarding Chai Elul. It says that Chai Elul, that's the days when the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe were born on Chai Elul. So it says that on that day, it gives life to the whole month, to everything you do in the month of Elul. That's why it happened on the 18th day, which 18th Chai is life. So it gives life to the whole thing. So the Rebbe saying is, we could say the same thing here. Chai Iyar, this idea of Lag BaOmer, gives life to the whole month of Iyar. What does that mean? How do you explain this in words? So he says, what's the difference of the months counting from Nisan? Nisan is the first month when we left Egypt. The Torah always uses the counting of the months from when we left Egypt. So it says Nisan is from the attribute, it starts with chesed. Nisan is all about kindness. Iyar is all about the attribute of gevura. Gevura means strictness, restraint, strength. One of the things is about this is chesed, it's explained elsewhere that chesed is like water. Water represents kindness, which is always runs downwards. Gevura is represented by the elements of fire. Fire always goes upwards. You know, when you heat it up and you're gevura, you're strong, you're strength, you're flying, you're going upwards, you know? Not calm and kind, you know? So, one of the ideas is that the passing of the students of Rabbi Akiva is connected with the count days of your counting, mainly in Iyar. We all know, in Nisan, you only count 15 days of the Omer. Iyar, a full 30 days you're counting the Omer. The whole month, every day, 29 days, you're counting every day. Sivan, only 6 days. So the main thing of Iyar is the counting. Because the whole thing of Iyar is Gevura. Gevura, again, means strength, passion, going upwards. What did we say? Upwards is the desire. You're yearning up to get close to one with Hashem. So that's how it could happen that they should die in this month. Because it was Gevura. It was all about flying high and becoming one with Hashem, but not being grounded. That's why it was considered to be a negative, because they didn't come back to be ground. Ah, Lag BaOmer comes and on Chayyar, and it gives the Chayyus, the life to the whole month, to stop the death, stop the dying. On the contrary, the theme should be spread to the whole month to bring down the idea that you also have to be grounded, and that's the emphasis on going out. Going in, but also coming out, b'shalom. Now, you could ask, back to our original question, he said, you want to understand the connection between the two points. Number one, that they stopped to die. Number two, that the Rashbi also passed away on this day many years later. So we're saying is because there's got to be something unique about the Rashbi. So till now we explained something unique about the five students. But what was unique about the Rashbi over all the five students? That he was the one to die on Lag BaOmer. He was the one to announce the day to be a day of Simcha. We get it why it's connected, because that's the day that gives life to the idea of bringing settlement and life into the world, not to just die for the sake of heaven. But there's something unique about the Rashbi that we see special by him. That by him, this theme that he learned from his teacher to go in but also come out b'shalom was more revealed by him than by the other four of the survivors. It says the Rashbi, Talmud tells us, that he had to run away from the Romans, right? He said a lot of sharp things about the Romans. He said what they deserved. And they were looking to kill him. So he had to run away, and he went with his son, Elazar, and they ran into a cave somewhere. And that's how they escaped the anger of the emperor. How many years were they there? They were there for 13 years in the cave. When he was in the cave, he was separated from the rest of the world. As a matter of fact, there were many mitzvahs that he couldn't fulfill. He wasn't in the world with people. Obviously, he didn't eat matzah. We know that he had a carob tree that grew, a miraculous carob tree, and a water stream. That's how he lived for 13 years, him and his son. So he wasn't able to do a lot of the mitzvahs. He did them in a spiritual manner, obviously. Now that is the practice of which one? Yearning spirit, living like a spiritual life, yearning, flying, or is it being grounded in the materialism of the world? Obviously, it's the first, yearning spirit, all living only a spiritual life. But that led to when he came out, everything changed. When he came out of the cave, the way it worked is that this attitude of being in solitude in the cave changed, and he was able to make in the world that should be normal. Even more, it says that wherever he came with his son, his son would look at people who were working the fields and it would cause them to be sick. Just his gaze at them. And Rabbi Shimon would look after and he would heal the person. Actually, the full story is brought down that actually they both came out after 12 years. But both of them couldn't handle the world. They saw people working. What are you, crazy? You're working. You're supposed to be yearning, becoming one with God. So whenever they looked at people died, a heavenly voice came down and said, back into the cave. You're not ready to be in this world. This is a world where people got to work for a living. So they went back. After 13 years, they came out. Then Rabbi Lezer, whatever he saw, his son saw, the person got sick. But he, whatever he saw, healed. He brought healing into the world. And even more, it says that he was able to fix any problems, he was able to fix them in the world. He looked where could he fix the world. That shows you that the Rashbi, his job and function, more than the other four, was not just to be in this world, but also to fix and heal this world. Rashbi one time said, he said that my characteristics, my emotions, my way of living, I got it from my teacher, Rabbi Akiva. But by him, it was in a revealed fashion, like it was by his teacher who went in, but also came out b'shalom. So it's true that Rabbi Akiva, we mentioned that all his life he wanted it. He said, when will I be able to go on a self-sacrifice and die for Hashem? But nevertheless, ultimately, he knew that the job is to stay in this world. And that's why when he went into the orchard, he came out with Shalom. And that the Rashbi managed to adopt. His going out of the cave brought the shuv, the settlement, from being isolated to being now grounded into this world, fixing the world. And there's also, he concludes the sicha here, that in the style, in the way he learned Torah, was also in this form. It says before he went into the cave, he used to talk Torah with his father-in-law. What else do people talk with their father-in-law, yeah? So he used to speak Torah with his father-in-law. And it says that whenever Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had a question, his father-in-law's name was Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yair, would answer it with 12 answers. But after he came out of the cave, he was so in tune, so such a high level of learning, that when his father-in-law would ask him a question, he was able to answer it with 24 answers, double. That just shows you that even in his learning, he was able to bring down the Torah to such a level to even be able to give 24 explanations. So this is the end of the sicha. So to summarize, why do we celebrate Rashbi, Lag BaOmer? Why is it a big day of simcha? For two reasons. It's the day when the plague stopped. By the way, according to Halacha, we don't make weddings, the Omer, for sure not until Lag BaOmer. There's an argument of when is which 30 days, the first 30 days, the second 30 days, so people don't do weddings the whole time, or except for on Lag BaOmer. But the point is that the plague stopped on Lag BaOmer. The other opinion is because the Rashbi passed away many years later on Lag BaOmer, and he said that they should be a simcha. What's the connection of the two things? Very simple. The fact that they all died was because they didn't have honor to each other. Why didn't they have honor? Because they were the students of Rabbi Akiva, even though he taught them is the klal gadol of the Torah. It's the fundamental rule. But nevertheless, he also taught them to say and feel all their lives, when am I going to die for Hashem? So they had that attitude. That's why they all died, because they didn't have respect for each other. They cared so much for each other. But since the Rashbi got, as a good student, he got even the ultimate lesson from his teacher, who went into the orchard and came out b'shalom both ways. He, Rashbi, got that also. And he got the idea that the ultimate goal is not to expire from this world, but to fix this world and live in this world. And that's part of what we all do to be, all our efforts we do is to live and live long and live healthy. And may all of you live gesunterheit and freilicherheit and accomplish bringing godliness down here into this world.